I'm here in Knockline Road talking to Michael Brennan. Michael, born in 1938,
In this house.
in this very house.
Yes.
And your father, what was your father's name?
Peter.
Peter. And he was here. Did he build the house or was
No,
he?
he was here long before I was born, but he didn't actually build it because we don't exactly know the age of the house. It is quite old, but I don't actually know the age of the house. But
Yeah, and the name of the area itself is Ballyroan, is it?
yes, all the area east of here was Ballyroan.
And now Ballyroan, how going back all those years, your earliest memory of this place?
My earliest memory of Knockline Road, this house was the first house on the road coming from Fairhouse Road or coming out from town. There were no street lamps, no electricity. It was all fields. As children, we went to the National School in Rathfarnham, which later became a courthouse opposite the Yellow House, and we walked across the fields from Knockline to Ballyboden and down to school in Rathfarnham. So in those days, I can remember when there were three motor cars in Knockline. Everybody had horses and carts and horses and traps, and shopping was done by going in a horse and trap or horse and cart to Terenure York, Camden Street, Thomas Street, areas like that.
And that's because of the wartime years, wasn't it? Because
Yes,
and there was a petrol rationing and.
that, as well as that too, even after the war, up to, I would say, the early 50s, there were only three cars that I can remember in Knocklyon. In fact, I remember the people who owned them in Knocklyon even then.
And there was a doctor in the parish
There was one
priest
in
and.
Cosgrave's, Mr. Liam Cosgrave's father. They had one. Colonel Newman, who lived in the old Castlefield house, had one. And the third one was owned by a family called Farron, who lived in Knocklyon House.
My goodness
And
sake.
then MacDonald's, who had a dairy in Woodbrook, which is now called Woodstock. The house has been demolished and they built houses on it. They got one of those wooden type jeeps, you know, the station wagon with a sort of wooden frame. They got those. And later, a Mr. Ashley Powell, who lived in Idrone House, he got a car. And when we were children, we used to sit out on the banks. Knockline Road at that time was very narrow. There was a ditch on either side. And we used to sit out on the grassy banks with a notebook looking for stray cars to get the registration numbers of them.
Because they were so scarce.
They were so scarce. And that was a major thing, like when a strange car came up the road, because there was a grocery store in Terenure York called McGee's, and they actually delivered the groceries by horse and cart.
Would you regard yourself as being out of the country? So, were you a
Oh, well, I
country?
tell you now, when we were young, what we could never understand when we were children growing up here was on Sunday, when you see all the children coming out for a hike, they go up and go into a field and sit down and have a picnic. And we could never understand. Like, we're here all the time. Why do they come out and they go and have a picnic in the fields out and blackberry picking in the summer? People will come out in their droves and they go out in the fields picking blackberries.
Yeah, we're not too far from Terenure, a village here.
No, the 49 bus, the 49, there were two 49s. The Enterprise Centre in Terenure was the Classic Cinema. And the 49 bus ran from the Classic Cinema up the Temple Oak Road to Talla Village and back. And that was the terminus. And that was the circuit. The 49A ran from the Classic Cinema to Bourne na Breena and back to Terenure. So what you did was you got one bus to Terenure and then you got the tram from Terenure into town.
Yeah, indeed. No, the tram, of course, came out and went all the way to Blessington, didn't it?
That was the steam tram. That was long before my time. I think the steam tram, my father
Oh, that
told me,
finished up in
in
1931, was it?
1932, 31, 32, I think it was a halfpenny to get from Terenure Temple Old Bridge to Blessington.
But there was a tram going.
Oh yeah, the old trams which ceased in 1959, they ran regularly from Rathfarnham Castle and from Terenure into town.
Yeah. Now, did a lot of life centre around Terenure College itself?
Yes. Like, Terenure College, like, was, there were very few colleges in the area at the time, and Terenure would have been the main college. All the other, now Sing Street was there also, but in this area, Terenure would have been the nearest college to here.
And would many of the locals have gone to that college?
There would have been quite a few of them would have gone to, but you see, you must remember in those days, Terenure College, I think there were many boarders in it. So I would think that the majority of the students were probably boarders at that time.
And what did the local people think of the college, you know, in behind those walls? Did they think that it was Carmelites were...
Never paid too much heed to it, really. I know in later years, Rathfarnham Church of the Annunciation was our parish church. And then at one stage, a bus started running from Temple Oak Bridge to Terenure Church. And then some of us used to cycle down to the church in Terenure College. Now, that's before the new church was built. There was an old church there, and we used to cycle down there. But the Rathfarnham Parish, we were in Rathfarnham Parish then.
Mm-hmm. But as an outsider looking in, there were boarders there in your time, were there?
There were boarders there, yes, yes. Yeah. Now, I didn't go to Terenure College.
Yeah.
But there were some around did go, but not all that many. Would have gone to Terenure College.
Mm-hmm. And where did you go?
I went to Rathfarnham and then Kevin Street.
And just before we go any, you know, too far forward, I just want to go back again.
Yeah.
What was your own father doing for a living?
My own father, he kept cattle, and that was basically what he did. Like, he's small farming was what he did. We didn't own the land. He rented the land.
Mm-hmm. Where did the Brennans come from originally?
Oh God, I don't know. Like, I have family scattered all around the place, and I don't really know. My father used to say that they originally came from Wexford.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm looking at a picture behind me of your grandfather. I'd say
that's my father's father.
Yeah,
that's my mother's father.
And what was your mother's father's? What was your maternal?
There was an estate in Bowden Park. Warner's owned it, and my mother's father was the farm manager in Bowden Park.
And what was his name?
Kelly, Joseph Kelly.
Yeah.
And he, up to the time, I think he retired about 1959, and at that time I think the land was sold off, and he retired.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what he did. Our memory of him, he went around with his walking stick and his hard hat on him, and he walked the land and he looked after
the gentleman.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was the steward on the on the land, and that was basically his.
And what are the circumstances that led to your mother and your father meeting? Did they ever discuss it?
Irish dancing. I've got a string of medals which my father won for Irish dancing, and that time I think it was crossroads dancing more than likely, and that was the circumstances of their meeting, was it, dancing.
Where was the crossroads?
I think I have an idea that the crossroads could have been Ballyboden or Dundrum, or, like, my mother now is dead 52 years and my father's over 40 years dead, so you can understand, like, that when you're young like that, you don't have the same interest in asking the questions which we should have asked.
And all that memory now is gone.
Yes, a lot of it's gone, you see, because, like, my parents are a long time dead, and we lost out on a lot of it in that respect.
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
I had four brothers and four sisters.
And you all grew up in this house here?
Yes.
And what happened to your brothers and sisters? Where did they go?
I have two. My younger brother was 22 in 1965. He was killed in a traffic accident in Ballyboden. My eldest brother died 4 years ago. I've got two brothers in Australia, two sisters in England. I've got my eldest sister lives in Carlow, and I've got another sister living in Talla.
Yeah, indeed. So nearly all gone.
I've myself and two sisters here, and as I say, I have two brothers in Australia. Now they're 52 years in Australia, and I have two sisters down, one in Bedfordshire and one in London.
And you know, growing up here and watching the place develop and watching it, a bakery moved in beside you.
Yeah,
when did that come in?
That was built, they started that I think in 1954, and they completed it about 1955, and we got the electric light when that was built.
What was there before the
a football pitch, a soccer pitch. In 1952, Rathfarnham United played soccer out there. But I have to tell you, when Landys came up from Rathfarnham in 1949, they built, at the end of us here, they built a very modern cowshed. And they generated electricity. They had a garage in Rathfarnham village. And in Rathfarnham Castle, across the road from that, there's a lake. And the overflow from the lake was a culvert which ran under Landy's garage into the Ondore River. So Landy's harnessed that. They put a generator on it. And they brought electricity from Rathfarnham to Knocklyon on their own poles and wires. And they were milking cows in 1950 with milking machines. And we had paraffin lamps.
Long before anyone else?
Yes. And the Butterfield Avenue that time, where the shopping centre is, was a golf course. Rathfarnham Golf Course. And the land that Landy's bought went down as far as Washington Lane off Butterfield Avenue. So these poles came up along the side of the road, up the lane and up across the fields to Knocklyon.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
You know, and so they were they had their own generator working away there.
Yes, they had this generator working. It was a culvert that it was the overflow of the lake in Rathfarnham Castle. The Jesuits were there then, and this culvert apparently went under the street where Orchard Auctioneers is. That's where the garage was, and this culvert apparently went under the garage and down into the river. So they put a generator on it. Mm-hmm. And as I said, they were milking, they had electric light in the shed, and they were milking cows in 1950 with milking machines.
Now tell me, before the bakery, when the soccer club, yeah, Rathfarnham, is it?
Rathfarnham United was a soccer club.
Did
and
you play yourself?
No, we were quite young, yeah, then, you see.
Well, you were watching.
Oh, yes. In that time we got a job marking the pitch, but we didn't do such a good job on that, I can tell you. But yes, they had a soccer pitch there in 1950 to 52 or 51-52, they had a soccer pitch out there. And then when Landy's decided to build the bakery, they moved the soccer pitch into another field at the back. Now, apparently during the war, there were two fields out there which were in excess of 20 acres, but they were long, and they erected telegraph poles in them to stop planes landing in them. Because they were very long, they ran from here down now to Washington Lane. They were that length, and they erected telegraph poles around the field to stop planes landing in them.
Were planes coming in here landing?
No, but this was I think this was at the time when Rathdown Park was bombed.
Yeah.
I think that this was a means of making sure that they didn't land any planes in it. Yeah.
So do you remember those poles sticking up in the field?
Oh, I do. I remember those poles sticking up. Yeah. Like they were there for a long time, and that's it. From that time, as I say, it was all fields from Knocklyon to Ballyboden. Yeah. From here up, there was a whitewashed cottage across the road from me here. There was St. James's Tree, 8 cottages was 11, Dargan Lodge, 12, Woodbrook House, 13, and Parkview. So from here to Superquin, there was only about 13 houses on the road.
Oh, good. And the white touched cottage across the way, who lived there?
It was slated actually, mm-hmm. But there was McDonald's owned Woodbrook Farm, which the land came down here, and the two men who lived in it, they milked the cows in McDonald's. And at the time, because they were going around the houses delivering the milk, you see, they had to milk early in the morning.
So there were two bachelor brothers, is it?
They weren't brothers at all. They were just two farmhands.
Yeah. And what were they? Any idea what their names
were? Yeah, one of them I know. We knew him as Jem Brennan, no relation, for years. And the other fella was known as Red Billy. Billy McCracken. Red, yeah. Billy, he was known. He had a red beard. But years later, I met Jim Brennan. He was working in the Loretta Convent in Rathfarnham. And I hadn't seen him now for maybe 10, 15 years. And I said, "How are you, Jem?" Oh, he said, "Don't call me Jem." He said, "Call me Michael." apparently Michael was his correct name.
Yeah.
But when McDonald's sold out, and these fellas then, Jim Brennan got a job down at the Nuns in Loretta, and I don't know where Red Billy went to, but that cottage was knocked down afterwards when the people who bought the land from McDonald's, they knocked the cottage down. They didn't want it rented out, and they knocked it down.
And what about the other houses up along? Were they were the original?
Yes, St. James. St. James. No, they're not. Well, St. James. Delaney's lived in the 40s, and Mr. Delaney died suddenly, and then a family called Murphy came to live in it, and they when McDonald's put it up for sale, they moved out in 1957, and the present family, they're Brennan's also, no relation. They moved into it in 1957.
In 1957?
Yeah, and they're still there.
Yeah.
Their daughter is still there. The parents have died, and the daughter still lives there.
And they're no relation of yours?
None, no.
Yeah.
The Brennans there, they actually owned Ballycullen Farm. The Jones brothers, the builders, bought it from them.
Mm.
And they started building there, but they bought it in 63, and they started building then about 95. 96, but Frank Brennan, he bought about 20 acres over here across the road from McDonald's, which was part of Woodbrook Farm, and St. James.
Hmm.
And he farmed that for some years, and then he eventually sold it to the builders.
How did you find growing up here as a young lad? Did you find, you know, that your parents didn't have that much money, or did you find...
Funny thing about when we were growing up, I always considered like that we were lucky. Like this, we had our own vegetables. We grew all our own vegetables. We had the milk, and we were lucky. Like, I think everybody, I think, there were 8 cottages up the road, and all the people there tilled those gardens, half-acre gardens, and they were all tilled. So, like, everybody, I'd say like this... Everybody was roughly equal insofar as living standards were concerned. Like, some might be maybe, like, we were lucky that we had a horse and trap. And so we went to Mass in it up in Firhouse Convent at 8 o'clock on a Sunday morning. And you could go into town shopping. But
you really didn't need a lot of money.
No, you didn't need a lot of money. I think like this, if anything, life might have been easier. In ways, although having said that, when people used to talk about the good old times, my father used to say he never saw them. That you always had to work, like, you know. That's, and I remember one time I was up in Delaney's pub with him, and there was an old neighbour up there, Paddy Purcell. He was reminiscing to the Mick Delaney who owned the pub about how he remembered when the pint was tuppence, and my father said that was all right, Paddy, if you had the tuppence to buy it.
Yeah.
You know, so like, people, a lot of it, like, a lot of it, I suppose, was hard for the simple reason that you didn't have, like, there was a well in the field up the road. I can remember when we had a tap out in the yard, when everyone else went to the well, and then after that they put a fountain on the side of the road in front of the cottages, and people went out to get the water from the pump out on the road. So, like, It wasn't easy in that respect, you know. Like this, I don't think people went short.
Mm. And what about, you know, you were talking about the tram into town. Did you go into town?
Oh yeah, and I know myself and my brothers. One of us, some were always brought to mind the horse, because wherever they'd stop, like, you know, you had to stay there and mind it. And the bane of our lives was when the iron wheel would catch in the tram line, and that's been the old cart around, and the horse would take off, because the horses, by and large, I think they were afraid. You know, the old tram lines, thinking back, it may be where they were joined together, they weren't tight, and there'd be a tump-tump, and the track would go over, and the old horse in front, when he'd hear it coming behind, you know, he had to hold on to him, because he wouldn't be too keen on having this coming behind him. But the trams were a funny thing at the time, because, you see, you could get on at the front or the back.
Yeah.
And when you got to the terminus, you didn't turn around. The driver just came up and got into this end and drove it from here. And, the trams were, in actual fact, after the trams went off the road, there was, across the Temple Oak Bridge, there's a little place, it's opposite, nearly opposite Spawell, up past Cheeverstown. There was a, Peter's built a bungalow there, and he had a tram in the field. He got an old tram and he used it as a glasshouse. He had it down in the field behind the house near the river, and he used it as a glasshouse.
Yeah, yeah, but he made good use of
he
it.
He made good use of it. But like, it was very nice when we were young, when you had all the fields. I'll give you an example of what I'm trying to say. I go up to the school once a year in Knocklyon. I bring the paraffin lamps, I bring the three-legged skittle for baking the bread, and I bring the old magnesio telephone with me, and a side, a sleighing for cutting the turf. And I talked to the children about what it was like when I was young. And they about the hunt, you know, Granny with the sack with the scent on it, and he'd set off at 9 o'clock in the morning. The dogs were let out of the tree, and on one occasion he only got halfway up from that far enough when the dogs got out, and he ended up climbing a tree to get away from them. But I was up there last year in the school. In fact, I'm going up there again, I think it's next week. And when I was finished, I said to the children, tell me now, what changes do you think are in Knocklyon now as when I was growing up? And he said, you had no TV, you had no DVD, you had no MP. What did you do? Now, what did you do? I can't ever remember being bored. In actual fact, my mother, Lord rest her, my father, would have to go out the door and call us. We'd be off up the fields playing at something or other. But nowadays, like they, it's measured now. It's measured now, I think. I don't blame the children. In fact, I don't blame anyone. It's the social conditions that they live in today. It's an expectation. Mm-hmm. Life is an expectation for them.
Yeah, that's interesting. But can you tell me, what was the employment around you? Where were people going to work?
Mostly farming. At that time, like, there was any amount of people, because other than horse-drawn machinery, there was no machinery. Farming. You had Orney Chocolates in Talla. You had Glen Abbey. You had Pi Radio in Dundrum. In the summer, where Nookgrove Shopping Centre is, Lambs had a fruit farm. And in the holidays, you could go down there and get sixpence a pound or something for picking fruit.
Jacobs? Were Jacobs here?
No, they only came out in the 70s. They were in Bishop Street. They weren't in Tallaght. They only came out in the 70s, I would say, they came out. Mm-hmm. On the other side of the road, there was nothing, only fields on that side. And on the other side, you had Orney Chocolates, and you had Glen Abbey, and Johnson and Johnson came afterwards. Mm-hmm. They were the three. They were the only three factories up there. In actual fact, they used to talk about Orney's factory being built on the Talla Aerodrome. Apparently, during the war, there was an airstrip up there, a grass airstrip up there in Talla. And other than that, workshops. Like Temple Oak Village, when we had the paraffin lamps, there were four shops in Temple Oak Village. You had Cavanagh's, who sold everything from sacks of bran to groceries, and also the paraffin oil. And I think it was 1 and 6 pence a gallon. Next to that, Arthur Kinsella had the post office. And Arthur sold licorice pipes and toffee bars and all that sort of thing as well. Then you had a paddock where the Gaynor McVeigh garage is, and you had, the next one was Jordan's Butchers, where the bank is, and beside that Jack Fenlon had a grocery shop. In 1948 they built the four shops opposite. You had Bulger's, the electrical shop, it's now Silvio's, I think. You had Allen's, the confectionery newsagents, Shannon's chemist, and Jack Fenlon moved over across the road and built a bigger grocery shop.
And was the area, you've broken up to little, you know, you had Rathfarnham, you had...
Oh, yeah, like, Rathfarnham, you see...
Temple Oak was, of course, that wasn't really developed either.
No, Temple Oak was on the pub, the morgue pub, and the morgue pub and four shops on the opposite side.
What were the shops? Who was in the shops?
Bulger's, but when the shops were built, the new shops, Bulger's opened an electrical shop, which was amazing when you saw all the switches and lights and bulbs and all the stuff that he was selling, because we didn't even have electricity. Next to that, Alan's was a newsagent's and sweet shop. Shannon's, they're still there today. They opened a chemist shop there. Miss Claire Ann Rooney opened a chemist shop there in 1948. And Michael Shannon, Lord rest him, started working there, and then he took over the shop. He died a few years back, and his son has it now. And next to that, where Massey's Undertakers is, Jack Fenlon opened a bigger grocery shop.
Mm-hmm. And you spoke about entertainment, the cinema down in Ontario.
Yeah, but apart from that, you see, down in Rathfarnham, I mentioned a while ago about Orchard Auctioneers.
Yes.
Between that and the Ondore River, there was a drop down. The pound where the stray animals were taken was in there. There was a couple of houses, but it was about half an acre of a flat piece of ground, and there was a dance hall on it called the Bluebird. Now, the story about the Bluebird, this is now what I'm told, up at the back of Morton's pub and fur house, near the weir, near the waterfall, there's a similar piece of ground in there. This dance hall apparently mysteriously disappeared up there one night and ended up on the Strand. And that was a local dance hall, and it was called the Bluebird.
Was this indoor or outdoor? Covered in?
Oh, covered in, yeah, it was a pavilion.
And the whole lot disappeared?
I'd say, we won't go into how it disappeared, but it ended up in that Farnham. Yeah, that was, it was running for, afterwards when they stopped the dances, I think that they used to, I wouldn't say now if it was bingo, but I'd say it was probably twist and bridge and card games and stuff like that was carried on in it. And that went on for years and years down there in Rathfarnham. And just between the police station and the village on the right, there was a weighbridge for trucks. And as you went up the hill, Landy's Garage was first, and next to that, Jem Jolly had a dairy yard.
Was there a dairy?
There was, between the right where Orchard Auctioneers is, you had Landy's Garage, and you had Jem Jolly's dairy yard, and then there's a couple little shops still there. Donnelly's was one on the corner shop. They're still there. But yeah. Jim Jolly had a dairy yard there, mm-hmm. on top of the hill.
Did these places have wheelwrights and blacksmiths at that stage, or were they all gone now?
There was a blacksmith's, Hugh Kelly. He had a forge beside Martin's pub and fur house. The cottage is still there, but they knocked down the forge and extended the pub. Now, Hugh Kelly's father had a blacksmith shop in Talla Village. That was two. And on the Temple Oak Road, Farrell's had a blacksmith shop. There's a place there now, I think it's called the Tap Restaurant or something. It's on the Temple Oak Road. Farrell's had a farrier shop there. And probably the biggest one was over on the Temple Oak Road, opposite Cheeverstown, where the mill. There's an old arch there covered in ivy. Now, the family who lived in Cheeverstown, when it was known as Kilvair, they built a house across the road with stone. There was a mill behind it. It was knocked down when they started widening the Talla Road to make the main road as it is now. Beside that, there was a cottage in the yard and a forge. And the story is that they diverted the mill race and overflow from that around the house when they built it, and that arch was built as a feature in the garden with the stream flowing under it.
Isn't that amazing?
Now, there is a history society in Knockline. I'm not part of it, but I was told one night that I didn't realise that it was sort of a formal thing, but that there was someone going to talk about Temple Oak House. I said, I'll go up. And I went up anyway, and this lady was talking about Temple Oak House, and when she was finished, she said it was any questions. So I didn't ask any questions because I didn't hear it. But when it was over, I went up and I said to her, you didn't mention the Munster and Leinster Bank owners, and you didn't mention Captain White. And she said, who are they? Well, I said, the Munster and Leinster Bank took it over when the people who were in it couldn't pay it. I said, Captain White lived in it. Captain Daly lived in it. And the last person to live in it was Henry White, who owned the Standard Shoe Company. And he moved out in about, I'd say, early 60s, I think, and the Columban fathers moved into it.
That's right, and it's now in public ownership.
It is, and it's the whole whist, or, you know, that card games in the bridge.
But there's a whole lot of history attached to that house.
There is, because down in the bottom of that, the fridge, or what we had here was a wire safe out in the yard in the coolest corner for the meat, because there was no such thing as a fridge. The milk might be put into cans of water, tanks of water, but there was this safe. Now, what they had over there was, you went down steps into the earth, and in the earth, the walls were there down the bottom, and they had alcoves cut out. And that's where, and apparently there was a stream used to flow around it, which apparently kept the ground cool.
So that would act as a coolant then,
yes,
for the...
Yeah, like an ice house.
Yes, and it was a wine store, was it?
I think it was more for meat and butter and all that sort of thing that they used it down there. I haven't been in it now. I was in it like after Henry White left it. I remember being in it one time. It was a big house. Then they did a lot of renovating to it, you know, over some years. They've done a lot of work in it. There was a lodge, the gates out onto the Tallaght Road, and there was a lodge there as well. But getting back to the blacksmith, Mr. Hollingsworth, his grandson has the bicycle shop in Temple Oak Village, Hollingsworth's. But Mr. H, we used to call him, and he used to chew tobacco. He was a small, squat man, and he had huge, big hands and arms, and he had all these certificates on the wall, covered in soot. And I was there one day, and I was rubbing them, you know, and he apparently, someone told me he was a blacksmith in the British Army during the war, but he had all these big things. And I said to him, Mr. H, would you not take them down and clean them and frame them? And he just looked at them, and he looked at me, and he said, it would take a lot of those to fill you. But he
was just the, yeah, I know, but was he not at all proud of the fact that he had achieved all?
No, he didn't. I know, I remember one time I was there, and this gentleman came in, and he says, Hollingsworth, could you shoe two horses? Well, he said, if I can't shoe them now, I'll give it up. What do you mean, Hollingsworth? Well, he said, it's a matter for the last 50 years or something. But he's very dry wit.
Yeah.
But he was a blacksmith and an engineering smith is what he had on the wall. Like he could make anything you wanted made. But do you see, in the late 50s, the horses started going out. And George Gillis, who lived in Washington Lane, he got a Ferguson 20 tractor. And George started ploughing. He got a Ferguson 20, and he started doing the ploughing and harrowing all around. I still have my father's horse ploughs outside.
Oh, yes, indeed, have you?
Yeah. Yeah, and the turnip sword.
But, you know, do you remember, clearly, this blacksmith, did you go down and were you there?
Oh, yeah, we used to bring the horses over to him.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
And you used to chat away to him?
Oh, yeah, chat away to him, yeah. And he used to chew, I think it was Velvet Plug tobacco.
Yeah,
but he was a small man, and he could pick up a sledgehammer in his hand as if it was a cobbling hammer to mend shoes. Very strong, and it didn't matter how contrary horses were, he chewed them.
And did he make gates?
Put tires on cart wheels, mend gates, mend horses' carts. Didn't matter what you wanted done, Hollingsworth could do it.
Yeah.
And he had this huge big bellows, and when you come in, you know, you got a job of pulling the rope to blow, and then he'd say, don't blow. Because you'd be burning this anthracite away, or whatever he had, he'd be burning it away.
Did he have a name over?
He had a sign outside called J. Hollingsworth, Horseshoer and Engineering Smith.
Yeah.
And that was on the wall. After he died, somebody else went in there. They weren't shoeing horses, but they were doing some engineering work in it. And then it was eventually knocked down when they went widening the road.
A totally different world you're painting here now, but it was too. Did you have in the village, apart from the blacksmith, you mentioned two buses.
Yeah, the 49 and the 49A.
Yes, that's right. Now,
let me put it this way. There were no bus stops. I don't think there was one bus stop between here and Tallaght. Because the bus drivers knew every house on the route. And if they came down the Firhouse Road, they would slow down at the end of Knockline Road. They would have a look up. And if they saw someone coming, they'd stop and wait for them. And that's because see, that time you may remember the canvas shopping bags with the rope handles.
Yeah.
And everyone had canvas bags either on the handlebars of a bike or carrying them. And the bus came down, and wherever you were on the road, they stopped. They didn't. There was no formal bus stop. There were places where the bus stopped, but if you were in between, they'd stop.
Imagine. Yes.
Yeah. That the 49 went as far as Talla Village, and the 49A went to Bournebrina. So you got the two of those to Terenure, and then you had to change.
Yeah.
And you got a bus into town, or if you wanted to go to Blessington or to town, you could walk to Templeogue Bridge and get the 65, which was a single decker bus. You could get that to town from Templeogue Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
See, at Templeogue Bridge, where Cypress Grove Road is, there was a huge pair of gates there, and Cypress Grove House, where the White Fathers are, that Walsh has lived in there, and the land at Cypress Grove House was a market garden. And they used to send their produce into the Dublin vegetable market in Horse and Drays.
Yes, and you mentioned the White Fathers, isn't it?
Yes, they're all black priests, actually. But they're called the White Fathers. They live in Cypress Grove House now.
Yeah, and just where they are, that's where there was a...
There was a big house, and there was a big conservatory, glass conservatory on the end of it, and an artificial lake out in the back, which they had fish in.
Right. And this enterprise, who owned this enterprise of growing all the...
The Walsh family.
The produce.
Yeah, Walsh family. Some of them...
Who were the Walshes?
Some of them still live in the two houses on the Talla Road. When you come out of Cypress Grove and turn right... Now, I know Mary, who used to pal around with my sister now. I suppose Mary would be nearly my own age now. She still lives there. She's a doctor. She still lives in one of the houses.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they might be her aunts who live in the other one.
And market day then, what day was that? Saturday,
was it? I've a funny idea. I don't know now. I can't remember as a child. We would just see that I think the first four-wheel wagon I ever saw being drawn by a horse came out of there.
Out of where?
Out of Cypress Grove House. Yeah, they had. I remember they had a four-wheel, and they'd have the cabbages and all pyramided up onto it, and they'd be
heading for the market.
Yeah, because, see, they had to come out onto Templeogue Road because they didn't have an access out the other end.
Yeah.
Because Cavendish lived in off Fortfield Road. They owned the land. You know where the Two Sisters pub is? Well, the Two Sisters were Cavendish who lived in Fortfield House.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I'd say that they're probably all gone now too, but Walsh's land was nearest to Templeogue Bridge. I'd say now from the roundabout at Templeville Road up is where Walsh's land was.
Now, everything seemed to be heading into Dublin then, you know.
Yes, I know. My mother, for instance, my mother used to bake her own bread, and O'Leary's of Camden Street, they used to come out here with a 10-stone bag of flour. She'd order it, and they'd bring it out, a 10-stone bag of flour, because she used to do all the baking herself.
And where would she sell the baking?
Yeah, but like that would last like for a while.
Yeah.
But you see, that I think the standard bag of flour, other than buying it by the pound, which would have been much dearer, she bought a 10-stone bag at a time.
All right, and that would continue on using.
That would continue on using that.
But you know, I'm just trying to picture in my mind. You know, you were living in the outskirts here.
Yes.
And so, what was happening in the city? Did that seem to be some, you know, a kind of a place to go, buy or to experience?
Yeah, the two main shopping areas, I think, at that time were Camden Street and Thomas Street. Now, to Henry Street and North Earl Street and places like that, and Cleary's would be in places that you went, I suppose, like on occasions. But a lot of them from the south side went to Rathmines, Camden Street, Thomas Street, areas like that, without having to cross the Liffey, you say.
Mm-hmm. So was there a definite line there? You know,
it wasn't enough. Going dancing now, like in later years, we went to Parnell Square, which was, you know, you had the National Ballroom, the Teachers Ballroom, the Iron Ballroom. That's where we would have gone on bicycles at a later stage, was in there. But it wasn't so much that there was a line drawn across it, but I'd say it was more for convenience. Yeah.
And you know, was there any rivalry between north side Dublin and south side Dublin?
Not that I'm aware of. Not that I'd be aware of now, because I know when we used to go into town on bicycles, you could just lock the bike outside on the street and leave it there. And when you come out, it would be there. You know, so the rivalry, not that I'm aware of.
You know, between in football matches, or, you know, if there were clubs playing from the
Oh, yeah, I remember when Rathfarnham United were playing out here. I remember teams now from North County Dublin coming here. And I remember one time that the follower set fire to the hedges after a match when they lost. Yeah, there was a few teams, I won't mention the names now. And there was one now from the southeast and a few from the north side, and there'd be quite a bit of a row now at them, like when the ball went over the end line, someone just punctured it.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and that time it was the old leather case with the bladder inside in it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't now like the pumped up balls they have nowadays. Like if they had one or two foot, if it went flat, it meant taking out like a bicycle and putting a patch on it.
Yeah.
You see, they might have, each team would have one, and if they went flat, well, then the match was off, because it took time to repair them.
The road system has changed here dramatically.
Yeah, in 1973, they started building behind me. There was, on my side of the road, there was a deep ditch. The river used to come down and it flowed in here behind me, along the edge of our place. There was a bridge out on the road, and the overflow from that flowed. There was a little wall built on the river, and when it got to a foot and a half, it flowed down the ditch. Now, in the winter time, the road would be a sea from here to the Firhouse Road, and the land on either side of it, because this stream came down from the Hellfire Club, and it was a catchment area. It was the lowest point, and of course in summer there'd be very little water in it, but in the winter time it just overflowed, and that was it. So in 1973, when they started building, the trucks started coming down with the sand, the gravel and concrete blocks. So as one was coming up and one was going down, they had to keep pulling into the side more to pass, and eventually they started pushing the banks into the ditch.
Oh, I see.
So yes. they had to culvert the ditch and pipe it down along the side then to actually widen the road, because the road wasn't wide enough. Mm-hmm. And outside us, there was a little humpback bridge, and they levelled that up by putting a few layers of tarmac adam on either side to fill it up. And, you know, some years ago, there was a hole appeared in the road, and people were looking in and saying, "What's that?" And none of them knew that it was a single brick bridge.
Where was this?
Just outside my house.
It wasn't.
Yeah, and I remember going out, and there was probably from the council, they were looking into this. I wonder, you see, when Comans of Ratgar had this place rented for about only 30 years, and they were bottling beer and distributing beer. They're up now on the Belgard Road, where Glen Abbey used to be. Comans Wholesale.
This was a bottling place here?
Yes, after the bakery closed.
Oh, yeah.
Comans
yeah.
took it over. And you had Guinness lorries coming, and you had all these lorries laden with beer and pallets and all that. And they'd park out there. So eventually the road started subsiding. And in actual fact, it was a single brick bridge that was collapsing. So they just filled up the cavity with...
And this was a very old bridge
old bridge. Yes. Yeah, it was only a single brick.
Yeah.
It was only a single brick.
And it serviced this road here.
Yeah.
It was a bridge. So there must have been a stream or
river. Oh, yeah, that's the river I'm telling you that flowed down behind us.
All right.
What they did with that then, they diverted that down under the front gardens of the houses across the road in Lansdowne. They diverted it down there into the Dodder at the end of Knockline Road. Before that, it went into the Dodder under Rathfarnham Shopping Centre. It flowed across through the old golf links. It meandered all the way down and across Porterfield Avenue and down into the Dodder down there. So what they did was they diverted it down the Knockline Road and into the Dodder at the end of the road.
How many people know that, I wonder?
I'd say very few. I know about 12 years ago, my late brother-in-law was in the council, worked in the council, and he came in to me and he said that the houses in Culamber Park across the road were getting flooded, and the water was coming back up the drains. And I started thinking, what could be causing that? And he said, the manholes out here are clear. I said to him, I know what that is. When they piped the river, John Doody lived in Charleville House on the Firehouse Road, and he had land which he had rented. And when they piped the river, the cattle had no water. So they dug a track down to it, they cut a piece out of the 4-foot pipe, and they set bars on either side so the cattle could go down to drink. And then when they started building, they put the piece of pipe back on, covered it over and left it. And all the debris coming down the pipe got blocked on the bars and blocked the river underground. And so instead of the water running down the drains from the houses, it went back up. And they had to get in and cut the bars out of it. Yeah, local people would be aware, of where the river was. Like a neighbour of mine just reminded me there last year about how my brother and I made a raft, and we used to go up and down the road with this raft when it was flooded, and put people's shopping bags on it with our trousers rolled up and our bare feet, and pull the raft up and down the water.
What year was this?
That'd be back in the late 40s, early 50s.
Yes.
And yeah, like the river, like once the, we in here in the house, you could hear the roar of the water out there, because the bridge is on the bridge was open on either side, and there was a ditch down on either side. And when the water came down and the bridge couldn't take it, it just went everywhere, just overflowed.
Yeah.
And down on both sides of the road.
And do you know I suppose building hasn't stopped, it's continuing. And
I tell you, I have no problem with development, but I have to say that I feel that development in Knockline, Knockline Road especially, is going to be realigned probably in the autumn when you come across from Spawell. Instead of turning left and right to get here, the road is going to go straight through. You might have saw a hoarding up there now where they're doing some building in there. The road is going to go straight through there and bypass the houses and come out up further. Now, up to 1973, there were green fields on both sides of the road. And yet the developers were allowed to build the houses right up to the edge of the road. Problem is, if they put two cars in the yards down the road, they're stuck out on the footpath. And so, because of the amount of traffic on the road, the road has to be realigned. I have no problem with development, but I feel it should be done right. Now, just an example of what I'm talking about is this: that the man who has bought all this property out here, he proposes to build this three-story block of apartments here. That's given the impression it's the same height. That building is 13 feet higher than my house. It's 30 feet high and 58 foot deep. My house is 28. So it's twice the width that way, and it's higher. Now, I know I got a letter from the council now during the week where they have asked them to sort of see, is it possible to scale this down to the same height and then go back up? But we have a lot of issues with it because my two sons live next door. And there's an underground car park under this block of apartments, which will be right out there. And the ramp into it is at the back, which means the lights are going to be shining straight into the houses when they come up from it. The density, there's very, very little open space. They're classing the balconies, terraces and back gardens as part of the open space, which in my mind is totally wrong. It's only 9 feet from the edge of the footpath to the front of these houses, which means that they're nearer to the road. It's 10 meters from my front of the end gable end of my house to the edge of the footpath here. Those will only be 3 meters.
Well, I can see, Michael, that you're obviously very upset about this, but at the same time, you can't stop progress. But I do, just all the changes that have occurred here in your lifetime.
Yeah.
Since 1938, you know, you spoke about the you know, 8 people living here all those years
ago. Yeah.
And, you know, it just mushroomed. Everything took off. And do you know what's lost? The old road systems, as we spoke about, and the meandering rivers
now,
that we spoke about as well.
The old people, when I was young, the old people referred to Knockline Road as the Yellow Lane.
How did you get that name?
Because laburnum trees and lilacs grew across it, and they formed a sort of a canopy along the road. Up to up to the time Super Quinn was built in 1980, there were still some of the lilacs and laburnums up that end of the road, and then they went. But the old people always referred to it as the Yellow Lane, not as Knockline Road.
And that was the old place name?
Yes, the Yellow Lane. Yeah, they referred to it as the Yellow Lane.
Yeah.
And like, I doubt very much if there's any of the people left now who would have, because like all that generation now are nearly all gone. And like all our parents are gone. And there's still in the cottages up there now, there's a half dozen families still there, like in the cottages, who would have been natives. The second last one now, they're about 30 years in it, and the fourth one now, I don't know who's in the fourth one. So there's about descendants of about six of the eight cottages still living.
Yeah. What did you do for a living yourself?
I was a technician, and I finished up as a line manager in Aircom. And I was responsible for communications in Dublin Castle when the Pope came, and for the first EEC summits and the one which Mrs. Thatcher came to, I was in charge of communications in Dublin Castle for those.
So that electric wire that came across the fields all those years ago,
yeah,
that must have given you the incentive then to what got you into the working with the ESB?
I tell you, when we got the electric light in 1955, I'd never put in a bulb because we'd no reason to. And I remember we got a record player, and you know, we started getting things, but the fellow who wired the house, it turned out that there was one 6-amp fuse for everything. That's always in the house. And we used to buy the fuses by the bag, and in a night you could use 6 of them, because we only had one 6-amp fuse, and that was for the, if you put in the kettle, and we got a fridge, and if you put in the two together, the fuse blew. And in 1961, I started going to Kevin Street at night to do electricity and telecommunications. And I ended up then rewiring the house over a period of time myself.
But did you work with ESB at the beginning, or were you ever with the ESB?
No, it was the engineering branch in the Department of Post and Telegraphs I was with.
Oh, right. Yes. Yes. Sorry. So it was more communications.
Yes. Communications. Yeah.
And what, you know, again, the telephone, when you think of the Bakelite telephone, the old big heavy phone.
Oh, yeah.
All the way to the mobile now.
Like I used to install the hotel switchboards, the big cardboards, and when you see it, they were like a kitchen dresser. And I think I was the last person to work on magneto, the old magneto telephone where you turn the handle in it. And I think the last place that we changed over was British Blessington, about the late 60s, 67, I'd say. We changed over at British and Blessington, and the people up there weren't happy about that, because if they wanted the vet, they rang the post office and said, would you ever ring the vet? And said, oh no, there's no point in ringing this house because he's down with Michael Brennan. I'll ring him. I get him there. But now you see, they had to go and dial their own numbers, and it was costing them money. Yeah. And a lot of people weren't terribly happy about losing the old magneto system, because they didn't have to be there, you see, because they just left a message with the switchboard in the post office, and they sent it whenever it was possible.
Yes.
But I saw a lot of changes in it, like from the time I started in it. For instance, when I started in it, in your own home, you couldn't put a screw in a box, move a socket, move a phone. You could do nothing. If you did, you could be cut off. Mm-hmm. It was government property. Mm-hmm. And you weren't allowed to do it. And then over the years, then I started supervising, and then I was in 33 years in town. I looked after Dáil Éireann, Dublin Castle, RTE, UCD. And with the restructuring in 1993, I moved out to Walkinstown, and I took over an area from Walkinstown to Fortfield Road, and it stretched from Temple Low Bridge to the canal. And I was responsible for all the work that was done in that area until I retired. I took early retirement.
Yeah. Yes, you did.
I did.
After all that,
I had done 37 years, and quite a number of us, they gave us the extra years to make up the 40 full pension. So,
and did you go out onto the poles at night time and go to the top to repair? Or were you in the repairing section?
No,
or were you just maintenance?
No, I started off on pole routes, all right, and then I went on fitting. And fitting, we just did switchboards, and I was in charge of that. We put all the new PABXs in the doll and all that sort of thing. And then with the restructuring, what happened was, we only did fitting. So in the area I was in, all we did was fitted phone switchboards. But then with the restructuring, in a given area, you had to dig the road, lay the cables, put up the pole, put in the phone, fit the switchboard. You were responsible for everything. So when I went out to Walkinstown, I got a bricklayer on my staff, I got an underground gang, I got a couple of overhead men, a couple of jointers, a couple of fitters, so that you got a few of everyone. And that's in that area, in the Crumlin area then, I think there was 13,500 lines in a new exchange in Crumlin. And we were responsible for all of them, plus putting in new ones.
My goodness,
that's... And you had to go out on site, like, and meet builders and get the plans and meet the builders and go along and decide what cables were needed or what ducts and all that sort of thing.
Well, Michael Brennan, I feel that I'd be coming back again to talk to you about communications and the early days. But I for today, and for the amount of information that you've given me on the local place, on Knockline Road here, thank you very much indeed.
Yeah, well, like, it's only like when I go up to the school, like, and people say to me, you should write it all down, because when you're gone, nobody will know it. But it's Knockline is, when we were young, it was all fields. And then gradually the house. Now, I never had any problem with development insofar as we had got the electric light, we got shops, we got supermarkets, we got churches. There were a lot of good things, but still today I feel that there's a lot of things which are not right. Like this thing here now is one of them, because that, personally, I don't believe it should be allowed in an area where it's all. This house is classed as 1.5 storey, and it would be classed as a Victorian period cottage. And to allow something like that to be built in front of it. I'll give an example. These developers submitted a shadow study, and it showed my house completely covered in shade, and my house was like a stamp on an A3 envelope in relation to the shadow. Now, I know the council have since asked them to provide a professional shadow study. But the other thing is that to open the laneway in front of me as a road, as a main road in, every car going in and out of there, there's a total of 33 apartments and 24 houses. And these are three-storey houses. Every car that's going in and out is going to stop outside my front door. And the noise and balconies, three stories up, 15 metres from the front door. I mean to say, like, it doesn't make sense to me. What we have said is we would love to see houses built on a nice, proper little estate of houses that match in with all the other houses in the area. And nobody, like, there's 18 people objected to this, and they're all neighbours.
And well, I wish you the best of luck in that.
Thank you.
Before I finish, Michael, there's a photograph here of your dad wearing an Irish Army uniform.
That's right. My father was in the battalion which took over from the British Army at Beggar's Bush when they left, and they marched to the docks down to Dublin Port, and they left the country, and my father was in the battalion which took over. He was also in the engineers, and during his lifetime, one of the things they did was they blew up the British military range in Tignock. And when my father died, the army requested that they might come and bring a firing party to his grave, to his funeral, and they did. because we felt at the time that it was very unlikely that any of his family would get the same honour. So he was buried in Temple Oak Cemetery, and the army came and they had a tricolour on the coffin, and they fired a volley shots over the grave, and somebody there gave an oration at the time. That was in 1967.
And your father, when the split came, he joined the Free State Army.
He did,
yes.
He was
one of the first in, as
he
you
was.
Said. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
because
so
he had been out in 1916.
Had he?
And in actual fact, he was jailed in Kilmainham, and himself and his brother, my uncle, they walked out. There were men bringing in coal, and as they brought in the coal from the horse and dray, they weren't allowed to bring the horse and dray into the yard. They had to leave the horse and dray on the yard and carry the bags in. And my father noticed that as they emptied the bags, they had to leave them in a pile on the ground to be counted. And he also noticed that the two coal men had coal bags around their shoulders. So my father and his brother put two gold coal bags around their shoulders and walked out the gate of Kilmainham Jail.
And that's how they escaped?
That's how they got out.
And that was just after 1916?
Just after 1916.
Yes. What was your father's name again was?
Peter.
What was your uncle's name?
Edward. Yes.
And they were as brazen as hell.
Oh, yeah.
So,
well, as he said himself, they had to be.
Yeah.
They had to be. Like, they didn't. And in actual fact, my father, during 1916, he got, at some stage, he got his right arm fractured and by a grenade. And at the time, he learned to write with his left hand, and so he could write with both hands.
Yes.
But the two of them walked out of Kilmainham Jail with coal bags around their shoulders.
And the Kilmainham itself,
he said there was armed soldiers on either side of the gate.
Yeah.
And there was soldiers where the empty bags were put down to make sure these fellows brought in the correct amount of bags, but they weren't allowed to bring the horse and dray in, and that's why the horse and dray was on the road, and that's how they had to keep walking back out to the road to bring in the bags of coal, and that's how my father and his brother were able to walk out behind the two coal men and disappear.
And they were never captured again? No,
they weren't captured again.
Yeah. And so during the War of Independence, he was a volunteer, was he?
Oh, he was, yeah.
Was he
fought the IRA. I still have his medal.
Yeah.
Yeah, he fought the Black and Tans. And
talk about that?
He did talk about it. He did talk about it all right. But not... I think it was a period best forgotten, really, like, you know, because as he said, that they were on the run so much that there were times they weren't home for a long time, and they just had to stay out and keep going.
Yeah.
I gather that I suppose local knowledge is a great thing, and I suppose I remember an incident here happened down here where the factories are behind me some years ago, and I remember I rang the guards one night and they came and they said, is there any other way out of here besides coming out here? And I said, there's 101 ways. So you see, local knowledge was a great thing then, and it was very hard to be found if you wanted to hide.
No, your father got a very... good sending off.
He did.
Like. Yeah.
He did, actually.
So what did he do to deserve that when he was a Free Stater?
I suppose it was his record, I think. I think it was his record in the army, because like he was in the army like when the army was formed. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he was a lieutenant in it. He could have been a lieutenant in it. Because I think that's the only photograph we have of him in a uniform.
Yeah.
But I know at the oration at his grave, in actual fact, I have it written down and I've searched the place. There was a long piece written in the Irish Independent when he died, and it gave a lot of his achievements and all. I have an idea that I loaned it to someone to photograph it, make a photocopy of it, and didn't get it back. He was in the engineers in the army when the army was formed.
Okay. Well, if you do get that cutting, I'd be very interested in having.
I look again because there was a piece in the Irish Independent. I'll tell you now. I know there were Mr. Liam Cosgrave and Paddy Burke were at his funeral, and I know there were quite a few politicians at his funeral when he died. He died. My young brother was killed in 1965. And my father got very severe depression, and he literally sat at the fire for about 18 months and then he died. He never got over. My brother was killed in a motorbike accident, yeah. And he was only 22. And my father never got over my brother's death. He felt that when my mother died, that it was his responsibility to rear us. Mm. And he it wasn't his fault, really. My brother, apparently... some boy who was retired threw a bicycle out in front of him when he came around the bend on a motorbike. And
Michael Brennan, thank you.